in the guest room. Maybe he didn't have feelings for her. Maybe he didn't find her attractive or interesting. Although what red-blooded, straight American male wouldn't find her attractive or interesting, I wasn't sure. "Biscuit," I called. No paws thumped across the floor. "Biscuit, I'm leaving right now. Come on." No paws. Really? I saved the dog from a life of off-brand kibble at the shelter, and this is the thanks I get? I guess I should have known she wouldn't want to leave the house where she had spent her entire life up until a month ago. I opened the door. "Send her into my yard when you find her." "Ansley," he said, "wait." But I couldn't wait. All I could think about standing there was her. That woman in this house that, truth be told, I had envisioned myself living in from the moment I saw his car pull into the driveway. I controlled my tears right up until the moment I walked through my front door. Mom was sitting quietly in the living room, the morning sun streaming through the windows. This was, without a doubt, the best time of day in this room. She didn't say anything, just patted the spot beside her. I noticed that even her hand looked frailer. "Honey, I know this is all a lot on you." She didn't say anything more, but the unspoken truth that lingered between us was that she was glad about the decision she'd made. I shook my head. "It's not. It's fine. It's just that Jack is right there, and now there's this other woman. And I realize I sound like a teenager." She smiled at me and patted my hand. "Darling," she said, "we are teenagers forever when it comes to matters of the heart." She shifted on the couch and stood up slowly, a pained expression on her face. I didn't help, and I didn't follow her out of the room. I was trying to give her space, allow her the independence she had asked me for. Jack burst through my front door, tiny Biscuit tucked under his arm. "Did it occur to you to tell me that your mother is dying? Was that something you thought I might need to know?" My stomach clenched and I put my finger to my mouth, but before I could answer, my mother called. "We're all dying, Jack. Some of us just sooner than others." Mom walked back into the living room and Jack looked embarrassed. "I'm sorry," he said. "I shouldn't have blurted that out like that." Mom raised her eyebrow. "You shouldn't have strange women spend the night, either. Look like a damn fool. It's totally inappropriate." Mom paused. "Your mother would want me to tell you that." Then she turned so only I could see, winked at me, and headed back toward her room. I stifled my laugh. Jack shook his head. "Again, she seems fine to me." "Jack," I whispered, "Mom hasn't told the girls yet." He looked shocked. "Well, she better hurry the hell up. I just found out because two ladies I don't even know were standing in front of your house saying what a shame it was and speculating whether the house would be for sale. The whole town is talking." When was the whole town not talking? "But I get it now," Jack said. "I forgive you." I could feel anger rising in my chest. "Forgive me? For what?" He stepped closer, making my heart race in a way I wished it wouldn't. "I forgive you for not being able to be with me the way I want to be with you. I've thought about it, and I understand it a little more now. You have a lot to lose." "I have a lot to gain, too," I said quietly. He raised his eyebrow. "What does that mean?" I shrugged, right as Sloane walked through the doorway. I studied her face to make sure she hadn't overheard anything about her grandmother. She definitely hadn't. "Hey, Jack," she said. She kissed Biscuit on the head, taking her from Jack. "Hey there, little Biscuit girl. Let's go play in the backyard with the kids." Biscuit started panting like she knew she was in for some fun. "I'd better go and play with the kids, too," I said. "Doesn't matter. You have Georgia now. Jack shook his head.
I do, he said, but let's not forget that I came back to Georgia for a different girl.
As I listened to the laughter outside the back door, I realized I'd come back to Georgia for a different girl, too. Three of them, in fact.
21. More sisters. Sloan. I knew from our first lunch together that I'd never met anyone like Adam, and that I never would again. Even in those first few days, maybe even in those first few seconds, I knew this was a man unlike any other. He'd quit college to fight for his country. He always had and always would put the needs of others before his own. That thought woke me in the middle of the night, roused me from a deep sleep as surely as a hand shaking my shoulder. Adam had always put others before himself. What if he was putting others before himself now, too? What if he sacrificed himself for his friends? What if they were the ones who came home instead of him? I remember being pregnant with AJ, how I knew something would change between Adam and me, how I felt almost sad that I was no longer his only true love and sole focus. I feared he would love this baby more than he loved me, and that things between us would be different. I know Adam loves our boys, but his love for me has never changed, never darkened, never dimmed. If anything, giving him those children made Adam love me more. I feel that, even now. As the sun rose, I fell asleep, thinking that no matter how much he felt the urge to sacrifice, Adam would come home to me because I was the one he was always fighting for. The next morning in the well-groomed backyard, with the boys laughing with Preston, who was having some very serious tummy time, Grammy in a chair on the screened porch, Emerson and Caroline standing beside me. The night before and all those worries seemed so far away. The tears had dried for now. Adam would come home. Emerson would be okay. The sun would keep shining. All would be right with the world. Emerson walked up the steps to the porch to sit with Grammy, and I turned to Caroline and whispered, "What do you think Jack meant when he told Mom he understood how much she had to lose if they were together?" "What?" I could see Caroline squinting through her cat-eye sunglasses. I was in a pair of old sweatpants and a t-shirt, while she was in a beautifully pressed linen dress and wedges, her idea of casual wear. "I just walked in the living room, and I heard Jack tell Mom he forgave her for not wanting to be with him now, that he understood how much she had to lose." Caroline shrugged. "I don't know, Sloan. I'm not in the business of old people relationships. I can't even keep my own husband off reality TV." She smiled, which made me happy. After Caroline, Emerson and I had sat down and watched James with Edie Fitzgerald on Ladies Who Lunch. After the tears and seeing how my always strong, always together sister was so very broken, I truly hadn't believed there was any chance they could get back together. But she had persevered. Her New York friends were livid. They thought she was weak. But Caroline trying to fix her marriage wasn't weakness. It was strength. The kind of strength not many people possess. But that was Caroline. "Maybe he meant since it was so hard for her to lose Dad?" Caroline asked. "Maybe," I said, but that didn't make sense. Sure, it was possible for Mom to lose Jack if they were together, but he wasn't dying. Not as far as we knew, anyway. She wasn't in imminent danger of losing him. Any fool could see he was madly in love with her. Caroline pulled her glasses down her nose and peered at me over the top of them. All I'm saying is, I told you there was more to the story. Mommy, watch this! AJ called for maybe the 400th time in the past 10 minutes. I smiled. I was here. I was watching. I would always want to watch. I felt guilty for feeling like I wanted a break, but this was the vicious mom guilt cycle. Let me see, buddy. He twirled around in the yard and then fell down laughing. Taylor piled on top of him, trying to emulate his twirl and fall. Soon we were all laughing. I felt that catch in my chest, that near suffocation that I shouldn't be laughing, not when Adam's fate was so up in the air. I looked back toward the screened-in porch where Emerson had Grammy crying with laughter. Emerson could tell a story like no one I've ever met. It made sense, really. Of all of us, she was the most Southern. This may sound weird, I said, but sometimes it makes me sad we don't have the same dad as Emerson. Caroline cocked her head. He loved us all the same. You know that, right? I nodded. Never for one day in my entire life did I feel anything but worshipped by our father. I never had any doubt he loved Caroline and me. It isn't that, I said. I mean, I know he loved us so much, I can't put it into words. By the look on Caroline's face, I thought maybe I'd lost her, but then she said, "Do you think it makes her sad? Like maybe you and I are more sisters?" I didn't get a chance to answer because I heard the screen door slam and Mom appeared. She looked at Grammy, who called breezily, "Sloane, Caroline, could you come here a minute, please?" I thought this was going to be our announcement to Mom that we were coming to work at the store. I noticed how pretty Grammy looked in her slim-legged black pants with a pale pink jacket over top. Her hair was styled and her blush was on. She was still lovely at 83. I hoped I would be like that one day. But if I was honest, with how little time I took to fix myself up now, the chances were slim. Grammy was seated between Mom and Emerson on the bamboo settee. Caroline and I were each sitting in a bamboo armchair flanking it. Grammy took one of Mom's hands in hers and one of Emerson's in the other, and I felt my stomach lurch. Had she found out about Emerson? "My sweet girls," she said, sighing. "I have some news, and it isn't good." She paused, composing herself. "I found out a few months ago that I have cancer, which at my age isn't all that uncommon, of course." I heard myself gasp.
"Grammy, no,"
Caroline said.
"You know I'm not one to take things lying down, but when they found it, it was already in my liver, lungs, and brain."
I looked at Emerson, my mouth hanging open, and could feel my tears, ones that matched those streaming down Emerson's face. Caroline's hands were over her mouth, and her eyes were wet as well. My heart felt like it was breaking in two as it hit me. Grammy was dying. My rock, the woman whom we had loved and adored and looked up to forever, wasn't going to be here anymore. Who would I call when I couldn't remember if the fork went on top of the napkin or beside the napkin? Who would I call when I wasn't sure whether to wear black tie or cocktail to a noon wedding? My boys wouldn't remember my grandmother. That made me cry even harder.
"I have taken some lovely medications to help slow the growth a bit, darlings. But as you probably know, at this stage there isn't much to do." She paused. "Well, there isn't much to do but live."
She was so composed, so stoic in contrast to the rest of us who were hysterical, sobbing messes.
"You girls are the joy of my life. I'm ready to go, but, oh, how I hate the thought of not being with y'all."
She cleared her throat.
"But you can't imagine how much I miss your grandfather. how I long to be with him again. She looked at Mom. Well, maybe you can. Grammy, Caroline said, walking to her, kneeling down in front of her and taking her hand. Isn't there anything you can do to fight this? Her voice broke as she said, We need more time, Grammy. We have to have more time. I loved Grammy. We were close, but she and Caroline were attached at the hip. They were practically best friends. This would hit Caroline the hardest. It didn't surprise me that Grammy's eyes finally flooded with tears when she looked down at Caroline. Grammy smiled sadly at her, stroking her hair. You know, sweetheart, I'm sure they could try to do surgery. Rip me from stem to stern, but at my age it would probably kill me. And even if they tried, it wouldn't help. She swallowed, strong again. It's my time, girls. This life is not perfect by any stretch. It's hard, and some days it feels long, but as long as you are surrounded by people you love, you have absolutely everything you need. She cleared her throat and patted Emerson and Mom on the legs. Okay, that's that. Let's get back to savoring every last inch of this life we have. We all got up and hugged Grammy, the voices of our little boys floating around us. There was so much sadness on this porch, yet so much happiness only a few feet away in the backyard. How could that be? Let's go out to lunch, Mom said. Grammy's choice. I think that sounds lovely, Grammy said. I'd like to take my girls out. She didn't say it, but we all heard the, while I still can, anyway. I was going to savor every last second with my grandmother. I was going to take every opportunity to show this family I had how much they meant to me. Thinking about what Caroline said earlier, I linked my arm through Emerson's. I love you, little sister, I said. I love you too, big sister, she said, smiling and touching her forehead to mine. Excuse me, Caroline said. Does either of you love me? I scrunched my nose. Well, we all laughed, the relieved laugh that comes in the midst of so much pain, of too much sorrow. Okay, Caroline said. Fine. Love me, don't love me. We all know I'm the glue that holds this group together. She paused. Both of you look absolutely atrocious, and I will not be seen at lunch with you until you do something to yourselves. Glue? Emerson asked. Yeah, keep telling yourself that. We all laughed again. Dutifully, like the little sisters we were, Emerson and I went upstairs to change, and I changed the boys as a bonus, too. It occurred to me that, no, we would never have the same father, but as long as Caroline was on this earth, Emerson and I would always have the same boss.
22. Gifts. Ansley. I don't know what it was about saying it aloud, but telling us she had cancer had released something in my mother, and released something in her disease. In no time she had gone from the sassy lady chatting with me over tea and sandwiches to a 90-pound gray waif. She was so weak and tired. It was time. Hospice was coming in a couple of days to get her out of pain. I couldn't stand it. None of the medications seemed to help. I've always been very good at being numb. I'm the doer, the fixer, the one to take charge. It keeps my mind off what is actually happening, so I don't have to face the sadness. I had lived through tragedy, so I was in a good position to say this was not a tragedy. My mother had lived 84 beautiful years tomorrow, and it seemed she would die quickly after a life impeccably well done. I was proud of her for that, for the way she seized every opportunity, lived every moment to the fullest while she was here. I didn't have to mourn the things she didn't get to do, because I knew she was leaving content. She wouldn't have to suffer through years as an invalid, or a slow, devastating decline. It was what she wanted, what we all wanted, really. But I couldn't help but feel like a part of me was dying, too. We talked so much during those weeks, and the girls, like they were children again, spent most of their time crowded around their grandmother, trying to get her attention. "You know," she said to me that night before she went to bed, "I think I'd like to go to Starlight Island tomorrow." There were moments, many of them, when my mother was confused, and I chalked this one up to that. We were practically carrying her to the bathroom now, and setting her on the couch during the day so she could be a part of the action. Her skin had become translucent and thin over her bones. Even sitting caused her pain. I wouldn't have thought about getting her into a car, much less bouncing her around on a boat. Mom looked at me intently. "Ansley, I'm serious. I want to go to Starlight Island, where I have my best memories, one more time." I smoothed her hair across her forehead, kissed her sunken cheek, and said, "Well then, Mother, to Starlight we shall go." She smiled, her eyes closed. "I want to see your father," she said softly. Daddy's ashes were spread all across that beloved island of his, that place where we were raised, that raised us. But I knew she didn't mean his ashes. "Did you know," Mom said, looking up at me, "that Starlight was the first place you ever saw water?" I smiled, my eyes filling with tears. "I didn't know that," I whispered. She nodded. "You were only 4 weeks old the first time we brought you to Peachtree Bluff. It was unusual for women to travel with babies so early in that day. But your father couldn't stand the idea that his girl hadn't seen the ocean." She paused and smiled, and I knew she was back in that moment. "He couldn't wait for you to see that spot where the river meets the sea, where the world connects, where we all connect." "The water binds us all," I said, repeating something my father had said to me so many times. Mom nodded. "You slept the whole loud, bumpy ride to the island, but the moment we stepped out of the boat, you woke up, quiet and wide-eyed, looking around. You smiled for the very first time, and we knew then that another water lover had been born. Your father was so proud." I wanted to stay longer and soak up all her stories and memories while she was still here to give them to me. Instead, I tucked Mom in gently, and as I left her room, heard her tiny, frail moan. I wished for a quick and safe passage for her, a gentle exit from this world where she was no longer comfortable. I wished she would sleep and that the pain pills would kick in tonight. I also wished I, like my mother and Sloane, believed there was some sort of beautiful next life where I would see her again. But that idea had left me long ago. I walked out to the front porch where Caroline, Sloane, and Emerson were all perched, a bottle of wine on the coffee table. It was quite stunning, actually, how those girls had rehabilitated my Sloane. I wasn't sure if it was the sea, the stars, the wind, or the sisters, but whatever it was, she seemed to be a willing participant in her life again, and while I could see the distraction, the wondering and the worrying written all over her face, she was a present figure in her sons' lives again. I was grateful yet again that this had happened when we were all here, when her family could pick up the pieces. "Girls, Grammy wants to go to Starlight Island." "Seriously?" Sloane asked. I nodded. Caroline sighed. "I'll ask Jack if we can use his boat again." Then she wiggled her eyebrows at me. "Unless you want to ask him yourself, Mom." I shot her a look, but part of me did want to ask him. One, I could see Jack. Two, I could see my favorite house. This project couldn't have come at a better time. It was the only thing I could think of that could take my mind off my mother dying. Caroline stood with purpose and said, "Oh, we'll have a party." Then she disappeared inside the house. I sighed. "I guess we're having a party." It made me think about being on that boat with Jack a few months earlier, how he had said Caroline was like me. In this regard, he was right. She, like her mother, was the planner, the doer, the avoider. Sloane, on the other hand, was wiping her eyes as Emerson said, "Please don't. Once I start crying, I'm never going to stop." "Okay," Caroline said, bursting through the door not 5 minutes later. "Kimmy is going to cater, and Kyle is going to provide beverages." She paused. "And Muscle." "Muscle?" I asked. "For the tables and chairs." She looked at me like I was dense. "Care," Sloane said. "You're the only woman in the known world who could put together an entire party at 9 o'clock at night." She looked down at her phone and typed, rapid fire. "Mom, I'm going to need a bunch of those blue and white striped paper straws from your store. Hippie Hal is going to set up tents with Kyle." She typed some more. "Emerson," she said without looking up from her phone, "I'm going to need you to go over there and string the lights in the tent." She didn't say anything. She didn't even look at any of us. "Caroline," Sloane said, "is this a bit over the top? She just wants a day on the beach." Caroline glared at Sloane. "Her last day on the beach, Sloane. Her last one, ever. It's going to be the best damn beach day in history, understand? Plus, it's her birthday." Sloane put up her hands in defense. Then we were all quiet. Caroline's chin quivered. Caroline never cries, so of course that set us all off. "How long do you think she has, realistically?" she asked. I shrugged and pulled her close to me. "You know, honey, I'd say maybe a couple weeks, tops." Emerson sobbed. She and Sloane wrapped their arms around each other. Watching Mom die was going to be terrible, but in so many ways it would be better than watching her endure treatments we all knew at this stage would probably have very little effect. Jack appeared at the gate and walked through the white picket fence. As he approached, I saw he was carrying 2 bottles of wine. He set them on the glass coffee table, which I noticed really needed to be wiped down. I stood to greet him, and he wrapped me in a hug. Usually hugs made me cry harder when I was upset, but this one soothed me. There was something in Jack's nature, his steady, easy way, and the strength that exuded from him, that made me feel better. Everything inside of me was screaming that I needed him, that he was what was missing in my life. But it wasn't time, not yet. He followed me inside and smiled sadly. "I remember this part," he said. I nodded, swallowing my tears. It made me sad that I hadn't been there for Jack the way he was for me now. Sometimes I worried the draw I felt toward him was nothing more than a glorified memory. But it was times like these when I realized what I was drawn to wasn't the kid I had fallen in love with all those summers ago. It was the man he was now. "How do you get through it?" I asked. I want to be strong for her, Jack, but it's tearing me apart to watch her die.
I don't think this is much consolation, he said. But this just has to happen. It's the natural order of things, whether it's today or 6 months from now or 10 years from now. This is pain you have to feel. It will hurt like hell, but then it gets a little better and a little better. And one day you wake up and you smile and you think of them fondly without feeling the need to sob about it. I nodded. I should be better at this. I did it with my father. I should know how to handle it. He took my hand and squeezed it. But it's your mom, he said. And once she's gone, you're parentless. The tears really came now because Jack had vocalized what I had been feeling all this time, but couldn't quite reconcile. I was going to be an orphan. A 58-year-old orphan, but an orphan all the same. He hugged me to him. I'm sorry, he whispered. If I could take this pain away from you, I absolutely would. What kind of woman wouldn't want to be with a man like that? But I couldn't lie to my daughters. I just couldn't. Jack and I walked back out the front door. Mom! I exclaimed. My tiny mother was curled up on the couch between Caroline and Sloane, a pale pink pashmina wrapped around her long-sleeved nightgown, a pair of fuzzy slippers Caroline had gotten her, on her feet. I couldn't bear to miss the action, darling, she said. I smiled at her. You never could, Mom. I was bolstered by the fact that she felt like being awake and out here with us. Oh, my God, Caroline exclaimed. I need to go get Vivi from camp. She needs to be here for this. Mom shook her head and said, Absolutely not. That sweet girl is not coming home from one of the best parts of her life to watch me shrivel up. But Grammy, Caroline started to protest. No, Grammy interrupted. Life is for the living, darling. Don't you ever forget it. I cleared my throat, trying to swallow my tears, and turned to see Hippie Hal walking through the gate, Kimmy on his heels. I laughed. It's almost 10 o'clock at night, you crazies.
We come bearing gifts, Hal said.
I pointed to Jack's wine. I guess everyone thought we needed gifts tonight.
Oh, we can do better than wine, Kimmy said, winking at me.
I raised my eyebrows. Hal reached into his backpack and pulled out a Tupperware container, and I was no longer confused. Emerson burst out laughing, and Caroline said, Those better be gluten-free.
Obviously, Kimmy said. I would never leave you out.
No, I said, trying to put on my most serious face. Absolutely not. There are children in this house, and there will be no drugs here.
They're not for you, Ansley, Hal said. They're for Grammy.
What are you talking about? She asked.
Grammy, Hal said. We brought you nature's very best pain reliever.
Oh, hogwash, she said, wrapping her pashmina tighter around her shoulders. If oxycodone isn't killing the pain, I doubt some herb is going to.
It's pot, Grammy, Kimmy said, pulling the chairs from the dining table on the other side of the porch, across from the couch, and sitting down in one. Mom cackled, deepening the expression lines in her face that had become more pronounced as she lost weight.
Well, why didn't you just say so?
Count me out, Sloane said. What if we have to go to the emergency room in the middle of the night?
James fell asleep on the couch, Caroline said. He can be our emergency driver. I could see the smile playing on Sloane's lips. I started to protest, but they weren't children anymore. They could decide whether they wanted pot brownies. We all took our seats in a circle around the side of the porch,
I looked out over the low tide, taking in the sliver of crescent moon perched in the sky. Hal passed the brownies around, and when they got to me, I kept passing them.
"Mom, come on," Caroline said. "It's just a little brownie. Loosen up."
I shook my head.
"What if it makes me paranoid or something?"
I gasped. "What if it's laced with something horrible and we all die?"
Kimmy's turned to gasp. "Ansley Murphy, I am offended. I tended this beautiful bud every day of its life, and if you can't respect its perfection, then you don't deserve any."
Hal and Kyle burst out laughing.
"Simmer down, Kim," Kyle said.
Jack squeezed my arm. "If you're ever going to do it, now's the time. You know where it came from, so you know it's the best of the best."
"Thank you," Kimmy said, grinning at Jack. "Finally, someone who understands me."
"Yeah, Mom," Emerson said. "Come on, do something fun for once in your life."
"Shock us, Mom," Sloane said.
I couldn't help but share a quick glance with Jack. No doubt about it, I could shock those girls if I wanted to.
"I am not eating pot brownies," I said. "Not happening."
"Oh, Ansley, just have a bite," Mom said, chewing heartily,
holding her huge pot brownie daintily in her manicured fingers. I sighed and reached out my hand to Jack. The crowd cheered.
All right, I said. Simmer down, all of you."
Then, under my breath, I added, "Peer pressure is not just for kids." I ate mine very, very slowly, as I had rarely done any drugs, and even those were in the late 70s. After about 20 minutes, I saw my mother's face relax, really relax. She seemed more comfortable than she had in weeks. I leaned over toward Hal.
"Keep the brownies coming," I said.
"Oh, Ans, Kimmy and I have a whole kitchen full of amazing things for Grammy to try. We're going to be ready when marijuana is legalized in Georgia."
Jack burst out laughing, and then we all did, of course. If anyone had ever told me this would be happening, I wouldn't have believed it. But sometimes, when all seems lost, the last thing you would have imagined starts to seem normal, natural even. I wished I could freeze this moment. All our happy faces, all the people I loved most in the world sitting around my front porch, the flags blowing in the breeze, the lights from the sailboat masts in the harbor reflecting off the water.
"Grammy," Caroline said, "we're going to have the best party ever on the beach tomorrow. I mean, I can't even tell you."
"Oh, darling," she said, "you can give me one of these brownies and tell me I'm at the beach and save yourself the trouble."
That set us all off again. I felt calm and peaceful and happy. All the hard angles of life were gone, and we were floating along on its soft, fluffy curves. There had been so much pain the last couple of months, so much uncertainty, so many tears shed, sleepless nights, new worry lines. I hoped beyond hope that when I looked back, I would forget all that. This was the night I wanted to remember.
23. Love Connections. Sloane. June 27th, 2010. Dear Sloane, I never understood why, but I never felt at home in college. I was searching for a purpose, a passion, something that lit me up inside. I know it sounds crazy, but the day I signed those papers to join the Army, I felt whole. I felt complete. I knew I would never be fulfilled unless I was fighting for something bigger than me. It's only now that I consider what this job really means in terms of what it is I'm giving up, because being away from you feels like a punishment. Even still, I know this is where I'm supposed to be, just like I know when I come home. In your arms is where I'm supposed to be. Meeting you, Sloane, loving you, has given me another purpose. And where, at one time I lived for my country, now my beautiful bride-to-be, I live for you. All my love, Adam. Marijuana should be legalized for military spouses. It's a fair concession. We have to spend years of our lives worrying about our partners for the good of our country. We should get this in return. I hated smoking of any sort, but eating brownies was fabulous. I peeked into the boys' room. They were both still out cold. I don't know what I did to deserve a 21-month-old who slept until 9 in the morning. Maybe it was a restitution for the fact that AJ was such a terrible sleeper as a baby. I took a moment to gaze at them, the best parts of Adam and me. Clutching their stuffed animals, they looked like little angels. I prayed quickly that I wouldn't have to break their hearts and blow up their world. I hadn't gotten that with my father. It seemed like a fair request. The smell of pancakes wafted up from the kitchen, lazily and unhurried, like the morning itself. There is nothing in the world, and I do mean nothing, like having your mom make you pancakes. You don't have to worry about what you're going to feed yourself, or how you're going to handle the million requests of, "Mommy, I'm hungry," when your little ones wake up. It's all taken care of. Our mom had always just known what we needed. Understood what to do. I wanted to be that effortless, but that nagging feeling that I needed something more had never really gone away. What did that do to the vision I'd had of myself as the ever-present, constantly available mom? I walked down the hall and slid into bed beside Emerson. She was sleeping so peacefully, her blonde hair draped across her beautiful face. She would be horrified when she woke up and realized she wasn't on her back. She was convinced sleeping on her face would cause wrinkles. As the big sister, I'd always felt the need to protect her. Only this sickness wasn't something I could fix. I couldn't even make her go back to the doctor. She kept putting it off and rescheduling. She was afraid to learn the truth. So was I, but there comes a point when even bad news is better than no news at all. She would get there soon, or maybe she would get tired of Caroline and me harassing her mercilessly about it. Either way, I got up and walked quietly down the carpeted steps in my sock feet. Mom was alone in the kitchen, crying into the pancake batter. "The recipe only calls for a pinch of salt, Mom," I said, hugging her from behind. She smiled at me and sniffed. "I'm sorry. I think this is how it's going to be around here for a while." I looked around the kitchen, as clean and pristine as ever, even though we were all here, making a dozen sandwiches a day and three times as many snacks. Somehow, in between helping clients, trying to put time in at the shop, and taking care of Grammy, Mom managed to keep it looking like no one lived here. She was a marvel, really, and I wondered if she had always been this way and I just hadn't noticed. Mom poured batter onto her griddle and it sizzled, filling the air with the scent of many a childhood Saturday morning. I grabbed a pancake off the dun plate. It was delicious even without syrup. She pointed with her spatula. "Grammy's request." I nodded. "When do we have to start withholding food? I mean, isn't that one of the hospice things?" She shook her head. "She can eat if she wants to. It's more about giving her a bit of pleasure than sustenance." Her eyes filled again. "We could feed her all day, every day, though, and she'd never come close to a normal size." I walked to the easel that was crammed into the corner of the kitchen. It probably should have been in my room at the front of the house where I could overlook the water, but it seemed my mother and sisters gave me just as much inspiration as the water did. And once the floodgates opened, they hadn't closed. The paint was pouring out of me now. The back door opened. Caroline swept in wearing a floor-length white silk robe. "What have I missed?" she said. "Besides carb circles." She scrunched her nose. They're for Grammy, Mom said. Not you.
I went in on that action,
Emerson said as she walked into the room. I smiled at her. She seemed less vulnerable when she was awake, vivacious and so full of life. I picked up the brush in my hand and the strokes flowed from my heart to the canvas. These past few days, I'd done the best painting I ever had, the most raw, the most real. Were these strokes of fear, pain, independence? Were they strokes of horror, exhaustion, dread? I've only ever been able to express what I felt through a brush. The easel was the only place where I could make sense of who I was and what that meant. Mom was neatly stacking the pancakes, a generous pat of butter between each one, and squeezing syrup on the side, just like Grammy liked.
Mom, Caroline said, Sloan and I are going to come help you out in the shop a little. I'm trying to convince her to sell her paintings, too, but I'm not as persuasive as I once was, obviously.
She gasped and dropped the syrup, and Mrs. Butterworth bounced on the counter. She put her hand to her mouth.
No, you don't mean it.
This was not exactly the reaction I had expected, and I wasn't sure what to make of it. Yeah, we want to help you in the store. Whatever you need. I just feel like something is missing. Adam, obviously, but something else, like... Maybe it's time for me to have a little time away from the kids.
Oh, girls. This means so much to me. It will be so much fun to have you at the store.
I laughed. I hadn't expected her to be so excited.
We all talked about it, and Caroline, Emerson, and I are going to take turns with Grammy so her care doesn't fall completely on you.
And the boys can go to Mother's Morning Out at St. James, Caroline said.
St. James, Emerson snorted.
Caroline rolled her eyes. I know, ironic, isn't it?
He's kind of being St. James these days, Mom said.
She disappeared down the hall with her pancake plate.
He really is, I added. I would never have imagined he would stay so long in Peachtree Bluff.
I know. Caroline walked to the stove, filled a pot with water, and turned on the burner.
He has to head back to New York, but I think I want to stay the rest of the summer.
I knew the work James and Caroline had ahead of them was daunting and far from over. I wondered if being in Peachtree for a little longer might help give them a stronger foundation before they went back to their real lives. Mom reappeared.
What's up with Mark, Emerson? She asked.
Emerson only shrugged.
She was being uncharacteristically tight-lipped about him, but there were weeks and weeks left of summer. If I knew anything about the sea, it was that nothing had the power to pull things out of you quite like it did, and at the same time, nothing had quite the power to fill you back up again.
24. 6 months. Ansley. I was already crying when I woke up. I knew my mother wouldn't die as long as she had this trip to Starlight Island to look forward to. After that, I wasn't sure what would happen. Sandra and Emily were already sitting in my kitchen when I padded in. When I saw them, the waterworks started again, and they both stood to hug me, one on each side.
She's going to be gone, I sobbed. Then I'm not going to have anyone.
Oh, honey, no, Sandra said. You have us. You have the girls.
Biscuit let out a little yip as if to say, you have me, too. But surely they knew what I meant. That had been the hardest thing about losing Carter, the thing I hadn't expected. When the initial shock and horror of his death had worn off a bit, there were still months and months of realizing how much I depended on him. For far longer than I would like to admit, I would think, oh, Carter will do that,
before I would take out the trash or change a light bulb. It still crossed my mind to ask my husband for directions, for advice about what to do with the girls, what brand of wine to buy. The list went on and on. Not 2 years later, I went through the same thing with my dad. Now my mother would be gone. Friends were wonderful and children were terrific, but they were not replacements for your spouse or your parents. A deep sense of vulnerability washed over me, as though, suddenly, I was open to whatever the world wanted to throw at me. I had no one left to protect me, though, frankly, I couldn't imagine what other horrors we could possibly endure. I tried to take that thought back, as though I was tempting fate. But Jack was right. My mother was going to die. It was always going to be hard. We would grieve, we would heal, and life would go on. The children were healthy, and while, yes, it would have been great for Adam to come home, for today we had to be grateful for what we had. Emily handed me a cup of coffee, and I followed my friends into the living room to sit down in one of the comfortable patterned chairs. "I just can't believe she's going to be gone," I said. Sandra and Emily still had both of their parents, which was quite a feat at our age. "But she's not gone now," Emily said, "and we're going to give her one hell of a going-away party." We all laughed. That was a good way to think of it, a going-away party. Only it was one thing to give someone a going-away party when you could hop on a plane to Paris to see her again. But she wasn't going to be in Paris, and I wasn't going to see her again. "You'll get to be together again one day," Sandra said. I rolled my eyes. My two best friends were completely undone by the abdication of my faith. In a town like Peachtree Bluff, or a lot of small southern towns, really, saying you were ambivalent at best about God was like saying you didn't believe in sweet tea. I stood up. "We need to get ready."
"Is it black tie?"
Emily quipped. "Black suit," I said. "Bathing suit." We all managed a small smile, and I heard AJ's tiny voice calling,
"Gransley?"
I saw him at the top of the stairs. "Hi, my big boy. Come down here and see me." This time, I really smiled. I was grateful I had my grandchildren with me during this tough time. They were such a beautiful reminder that life did indeed go on. There was more, and it was wonderful. AJ was wearing green and white striped pajamas, sucking his thumb and clutching his blankie. Before I turned around, he would be 21. I wanted to freeze time and keep him at this sweet, innocent age, when life is full of possibility. He climbed up into my lap as Sandra said,
"We'll see you in a couple hours."
They made their way out the front door as AJ rested his head on my chest. "You are the best snuggler I know." He looked up at me and smiled.
"I love to snuggle."
"I know you do. Will you still snuggle me when you're 8?
He thought for a moment. "No, Gransley, but maybe when I'm 6.
I laughed. "Sounds fair." It broke my heart that in this short couple of months my grandson had started calling me Gransley, not Gwansley. He was growing up too quickly. They all did. I heard voices on the landing. I couldn't make out what they were saying, but Sloane and Emerson sounded like they were deep in conversation. The back door flung open, and Caroline called,
"Who's ready to party?"
Mom's weak voice called back,
"I am."
I rushed into her room. It was dark, the blinds were closed, and she seemed so small in the king bed that she was barely detectable. I leaned down and kissed her. "Good morning, Mom. Do you feel like you can get up today?"
"Yes," she said in her small voice. "I have to get up. I have a party to get ready for heaven's sake."
Her spirit hadn't waned.
Emerson helped me lead Mom very slowly into the bathroom to complete her morning routine. I knew she would be exhausted by the time we were finished. It would take all the energy she had to simply complete her everyday tasks.
"I'm going to get this hair looking good," Emerson said.
I looked down at my watch. It was nearly 8:30. I heard a light rap on the door. I was still in my robe with no makeup and hair pulled back into the squatty ponytail that was all my shoulder-length hair could manage.
"Sloan," I half-yelled, half-whispered, "get the door and take Jack into the kitchen."
If he was safely stowed away there, I could sneak upstairs and get presentable.
"Where's your mom?" I heard Jack ask.
"Oh, she's hiding in Grammy's room so you won't see her without her makeup."
She would pay for this. I had brought her into this world and I could take her out of it. Emerson was still with Mom in the bathroom and Jack peeked his head in. I pretended that I was making the bed, not hiding.
"Hey,"
he said, winking. I threw a pillow at him and put another one up to my face.
"I will be ready in 10 minutes, I promise."
"I think you look great now."
I couldn't see his face because mine was covered with a pillow. On the one hand, it was silly. The man and I had been through everything together, and he had certainly seen me without my makeup before. But I was young then, fresh, wrinkle-free. Now I had to keep up appearances, and as much as I didn't want to admit it to myself, keep him interested. You know, just in case. 20 minutes later, Jack and I were standing on the teak deck of his beautiful boat. It felt so rewarding to see one of my completed projects.
"So," he said, "brought back a lot of memories getting high with you last night. Good times."
I swatted him playfully. "It was only once, Jack," I said, remembering as clearly as if it had happened the day before, sitting in the cabin of Bobby Franklin's boat with Jack, Sandra, Emily, Bobby, and their friend Craig, passing around an ill-rolled joint, feeling very, very rebellious.
"Twice," he said.
"That must have been another girl." It was silly, but I felt jealous thinking of Georgia. Her car had been at Jack's house for quite some time the day before. Much longer than your general realtor check-in. But this was what I deserved. I had told him we couldn't be together. What did I expect?
"It was not another girl," he said. "It was you and me over by the lighthouse. And then we..."
He wiggled his eyebrows. I put my hand over my mouth and could feel the blush coming up my cheeks.
"Jack!"
I scolded. But then I said, "How could I have forgotten that night?" He smiled up at me, and our eyes met for a bit too long. I couldn't help but think of how something similar had transpired between us in this very boat a couple months earlier. If I was honest with myself, I wanted it to happen again. We were standing so close together, the energy between us so thick you could almost see it. I wondered, briefly, what would happen if I leaned over and kissed him just this once? What could it possibly hurt?
Jack clapped his hands as if to snap us both out of it. "Okay," he said, leaning down and picking up the big bag from my store I had dropped on the deck.
"Jack," I said.
He looked up at me again and said,
"I can't, Ansley. I can't even think about the start of this road when I know where it ends."
The impulsive part of me, the part that still loved that boy as much as I had that night on the beach by the lighthouse, wanted to tell him the road didn't have to end, that I had been stupid and made a snap decision. But then I thought of all the people getting ready to get on this boat and how much they needed me. My mother was dying, for heaven's sake. This was not the time to be kissing high school crushes on their beautiful yachts. Before I could say anything, Jack handed me a pillow. I had covered the banquette around the dining table in blue and white striped sunbrella,
and combined with these pillows, it would be a plush and comfy place for Mom to hang out. I turned around to see them all, my mother, frail and tiny, wrapped in a blanket despite the heat, James on one side, Hippie Hal on the other.